Welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. Our second Perth Cardi Party, hosted by Andrew Kelly, features Karen Miller, Curtin University Library Learning Coordinator and Academic. Karen discusses the evolution of the makerspace as a learning space to foster the development of skills and a space which invites hands-on exploration of emerging technologies to cultivate expertise for the future workplace.
Anyway, thank you for our second Cardi Party. Welcome, all the amazing people. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land we're meeting on today, the Noongar Whadjuk people. I wish to acknowledge and pay respect to their continuing culture and to the contribution that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people make to the life of the city and to all of Western Australia. I offer my respects to elders past, present and future, particularly those who are with us today. Thank you so much. I just want to introduce myself. I'm Andrew, for those who don't know me. I'm part of the Cardi Corps in Perth and Melbourne. Don't ask. We have Brigitta.
Hello.
Yes. Good. Oh, thank God. and we have Matthias and Michelle, who's just joined us, but they couldn't make it tonight. A couple of housekeepings. We do Glam Blog Club. So if you don't know about Glam Blog Club, it's where we encourage people who want to blog and are in glam. And we have themes. So we've just done Balance for November. And the current one is Collaboration for December. So if you want to blog, or if you know someone like in archives or museums or galleries or libraries who want to blog, give them a nudge. And I'm going to introduce Karen Miller, who has wonderfully agreed to do this Cardi Pass. Cardi Party. I would like to thank Curtin as well for hosting us.
Hey.
Over to you, Karen.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew. I am delighted to be your host tonight. I'm in place of Marie, who is the Makerspace Coordinator, and she wasn't able to make it, so I'm filling in for her. But I've had quite a bit to do with the Makerspace, so hopefully I'll be able to give you a sense of what the Makerspace is about, and most importantly, answer any questions or, you know, just generally have a discussion. I don't really want to talk a lot. And we've also got Janice, who is a maker, and she's also a research coordinator here at the library. She's involved a lot. And we've got Matteo, who's an engineering student, and he also works in the library as a library student assistant. And we've been fortunate enough to be able to commandeer him to work in here a little bit too. So he's here as well tonight. I was involved in getting the Makerspace started throughout 2015. So just to give a little background where I'm coming from. And then the following year, I stepped back a little bit because I did a bit of teaching here at the Information Studies Department. And then at that stage, Marie stepped into part of my role to look after the Makerspace things going on. And then this year, I stepped out completely and I've been doing a bit more teaching. So my involvement with the Makerspace has sort of been as a client, really, bringing classes here and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's been quite interesting having the two perspectives as a library staff member, but also as a member of the teaching staff and being able to come in as a client. So you know the story of the butterfly effect, when a butterfly, it comes from chaos theory, when a butterfly flaps its wings in Hawaii and it eventually causes a hurricane in China. That kind of applies a little bit to our Makerspace. We do have a butterfly in our story of the Makerspace, and that butterfly is Andrew. You didn't know you were the butterfly.
I didn't know.
So Andrew gave...
This is unintentional, sorry.
No, he doesn't know about this. Andrew gave a talk at a library technicians conference. I don't know, it was 2014 perhaps, or 2013. We had a library technician here, Adele McDonald, who was at that conference. She came back to the library. We had a planning meeting that year and she put it forward as an idea. We had a culture at the time that wasn't really conducive to this kind of initiative, and so nothing really happened. But I was there, I heard a presentation, I thought it was an amazing thing. It was the first time I'd sort of been exposed to the idea of a makerspace. I just thought it was an amazing idea. Throughout that year, I had a few conversations with people. Adele went on maternity leave. So the next planning meeting a year later, I pitched it, and it got accepted as a strategic initiative. So that was when we started in 2015. So I just wanted to say that because I think sometimes when we, you know, we communicate our ideas and stuff, we really don't necessarily know the impact that it does have. But I also wanted to say that Andrew has contributed to the makerspace in a lot more ways than just being flapping his wings at a conference. He's been a really important and person for us to have contact with in the library sector, generally to collaborate on projects and workshops and advice and inspiration and so on. So I didn't want to sort of like launch into the story of how this makerspace evolved and what we do here and how we run it and all that sort of thing to start with. I thought it would be nice to sort of jump in and just talk a little bit about the equipment and the sort of things that we have and do a little bit of a show and tell of some projects so you can get a sort of a sense of the kind of things that we do here, although we do a lot of other sort of broader things that go beyond just our own little individual pet projects, but it will give you a sense of it. And then after that, I'm really happy to talk about, you know, anything that you'd like to know about in terms of how it came about and how it runs and all that sort of thing, what we do and who we work with and all that sort of thing. But I'd rather respond to things that you are interested in, and so it'd be great if perhaps while we do the show and tell, you could think of questions that you would, or things you'd like to know about, and then we can respond to that. And we'd also like invite you to make some things. Hopefully we'll have time at the end. So we've got the badge maker with some new cardigan template or sort of designs that Andrew put together. So make a badge. We've got some Christmas cardy things over there. We've got the makey to play with, and we've got the virtual reality vibe set up with toothbrush. We've got, yeah, just stuff, little bits, and we've got, if you're into knitting, you could do a bit of yarn bombing. And we thought it'd be kind of fun if there was time at the end to just make something. So we'll just start off with Janice talking a little bit about her project, and then Matteo, and then I'll sort of demo the
makey. So this is a little project that I've been working on. As you can see, it lights up when I talk. It's actually, well, it looks like that inside. So they are LED lights that are chainable. They're called LilyPad Pixels, or sometimes known as NeoPixels. These are some wearable boards that you can purchase on the internet, and this is a LilyPad Arduino microcontroller. And what I have now is that I've got a USB micro USB cable that plugged into the LilyPad, and I have to plug it into my laptop because I haven't got a battery. It's in the post. So basically, what I did is I used some conductive thread to sew these pixels together. And then they are really clever. You can just use the thread to chain them up together. And then they all need to come back to one single pin on the microcontroller. And once the circuit is working, I then use the Arduino IDE thingy, whatever it's called, to load the program onto the LilyPad. So just to first test the LEDs are working, and then I added the microphone to the middle. So the microphone component is not sewable, so it's a traditional component which I have to use wire, and I also have to learn how to solder. That was so much fun. I hated it so much. But eventually it worked, and then the fun part is to try to connect the traditional electronics to the sewable electronics. And I think I did a lot of experiment, and somehow it worked. And then I made some really poor connection down the positive and negative pins. And then the LEDs start flickering and the program didn't work. So I brought it to work and asked some experts who work in the makerspace. And then I learned how to fix it. He also showed me how to change the other pins so that they work as a power output as well. So now it's working. what I need to do next is to make it into a badge. So what I will do is to sew a heart-shaped pouch so that it contains the electronics like this, and then at the back I would sew a little pocket for the battery and then a pin at the back so that I can wear it. Originally I was hoping to make a dress, but then I thought if I can make a badge that I can wear with any dresses, why am I doing it on one dress and I will have to wear one dress to all the Christmas party. So that's my little pet project, and it's all really inspired by the little projects that I've seen in the makerspace before. So 3 weeks ago, I was reading articles about what is a circuit, and and I made this in a few weeks, so that was really fun. So that's my project, Mateo.
Well, I don't really have a set project at the moment, but I guess maybe just in terms of why I got involved with the makerspace, having come back to engineering studies after being in industry for a number of years and heard about jobs in the library and thought, okay, that's cool. I don't want to be running back and forth between a job and campus. So got involved as a library student assistant and found out about the makerspace in its early days and thought, okay, well, that's a really great initiative and I'd like to see more of that happening around Perth, because there's maker fairs that happen all over the world. We've got new collaboration spaces popping up like Space Cube, Vic Park Mini Lab. And so, okay, it was nice to see the library kind of jumping on board with this initiative, and then sort of heard the call out for, oh, we want some library student assistants to help out in the makerspace. And I thought, okay, that's a good way to put both sides together in terms of back studying engineering and being in a makerspace, being able to play with the equipment and just really, I guess, keep myself enthused and motivated as I sort of progress through. So my main interest here is, I guess, more the electronics side. We've got some of these little bits kits, for example, that are just magnetic. You just clip them together depending on the circuit you want to create. Each piece has its own individual function, and this is a little bit of a board that I just set up for the opening of the makerspace that we had a few weeks back, and it was just a little ping pong idea. So basically you just upload the software, you had two slider controllers and it was up on the screen, but unfortunately we didn't have that set up for you today, but that's just an example of one of the things you can make. The Google AI kit over here, connected to the screen, that's not mine. One of the other guys involved here, Dan, brought that in, but essentially you can obviously ask it a question. So, for example, okay, Google, what is a makerspace?
Makerspace, a place in which people with shared interests, especially in computing or technology, can gather to work on projects while sharing ideas, equipment, and knowledge.
Maybe that definition could be updated at some point. It's very tech-centric. But yeah, just another example of what can be done. And you know, we've got little Arduino kits. We've got some stuff for the Internet of Things, although we've got to look into that a bit further as to how we maybe link that in with our existing Wi-Fi or something else down the line. But yeah, I mean, it's just a really nice collaborative space that people can get involved with and just let their kind of creativity run wild. And I'm just glad to be a part of it and help it progress forward and come up with some new initiatives as time goes on. So that's kind of me in a nutshell in terms of my involvement here.
Thanks, Pim. So I wanted to talk about the Makey. I don't know whether you know how it works. It's just a little micro, I don't know all the right terminology, but basically what it does...
I guess it's kind of like, like a microcontroller in a way. But the board, that board is, I guess, the controller, and then you're just interfacing the two.
Yes. So you hook up to spots on this board, which correspond to keystrokes on the keyboard. So basically what it's doing, it's making a keyboard out of things that this will connect to. So I can connect from the Makey to anything that's conductive. And then by touching these conductive things, you then can control whatever you have up on your computer. So it's a way of interacting digitally with digital elements, but connecting with the tangible world. And so it's just a really, really simple but incredibly fun and effective thing to get people, especially kids, just engaged with learning about circuitry, but also just imagination in terms of prototyping. It's really fantastic for prototyping activities and games and all sorts of things. So this is one of my projects, which I also use some conductive thread to link up to make a little glove as a game controller, which I can demonstrate later. But I did want to demonstrate how you can integrate Makey Makey with the Scratch program. Okay, so for those of you who don't know about Scratch, it's a little program which you can learn to code by, instead of typing in all of the commands, it's got block commands made up into blocks, so you just drag the blocks over to, you know, sort of do programming tasks. So it's great for making games or that kind of thing. So I made a very simple program to run this Makey Makey from, and I have made two little fellows here, which bear no resemblance at all to particular politicians. Any resemblance is totally coincidental. So,
as is the knife.
As is the knife. So I'm hoping this is just going to work right. I'm just going to attack these guys.
It's going to become our new stress therapy.
Yeah. It's a therapy machine, I'm calling it. Yeah. So basically that that program was just saying when the left button, so that would work with these buttons. So when the left, so this is attached to left button into the orange, which is conductive. Yeah. So yeah. A very, very simple thing. But you know, you obviously can get very, very complex with it, because with the Makey Makey, there are not
that's
only
the other example as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful example here of the Makey Makey, where one of our staff painted this beautiful picture, and it has some conductive pins here, and we need to...
Yeah, I don't know who was logged on with it, but it might...
Yeah,
we need to see what user account was.
Yeah, we did have that set up, but it's...
It's now
But we will show that afterwards, but we'll just keep moving on. I think that's probably enough of that kind of demo. I think you've probably already kind of seen what we do have here. We have a media studio, we've got VR gear... we've got lots of sort of crafty things like scanners, scanning cuts and sewing machines and, you know, just all this stuff. So, yeah, as I said, afterwards you're most welcome to have a go at anything you like. Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point it'd be just great to hear I'm happy to talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. So... You know, why make a space? What are the sort of rationales underpinning the learning in the makerspace, and how we feel about that? You know, our mission here, or what we're all about. Why in an academic library? How does the space operate? How did it evolve? What are our successes? What are our failures or our challenges? That kind of thing. Is there anything in particular that you would like to know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so just go on. Just carry on. Okay. Or will you stop me when it's time? Because it would be nice to just have, you know, discussion and that sort of thing. All right. So I'll start with how it evolved. I suppose that's a good... So where we started, and then... So I've already told you a little bit about the beginning, that it came as a strategic initiative in the beginning of 2005. Because I'd pitched it at the planning, I got to lead the initiative. But we were kind of smart when we worded it. So we didn't say, we will set up a space, a maker space. that was not the challenge. For us, it was to establish a maker community. And that was because not only did we recognise that it was the community, it was the people, the relationships, the makers themselves, which is really the core and the heart of a makerspace. So just a space on its own filled with fancy stuff is nothing if you don't have people who use it, who are willing to share, willing to learn, willing to make things and to, you know, create the maker community within it. So that was one of the rationales, was just acknowledging that it was about community, but also that it's kind of cheap. because you know, it doesn't cost much to start making those relationships. We didn't really have a budget, although because it was a strategic initiative, the library was prepared to support it, but we weren't quite sure what, we didn't really have a space. It also meant that we didn't, because we didn't have to establish a space, we didn't have to actually engage in any politics around the space of the library, which is great. You know, when I think back, I think we didn't need to negotiate for a space, because as you know, spaces in libraries can be quite, you know, fraught. And so it really just took that out of it completely. So we really just started by identifying people or just within the library who were makers, and we were just quite fortunate to have people already in the library who were makers, who were really interested and keen. So there was probably a group of about six of us, I suppose, who would sort of meet regularly to just plan things. And we just started off with basically trying to identify and connect with people around. So not only within the library, but on the campus. So who was doing stuff out there already? Obviously, there's a lot of disciplines who have a lot of fantastic maker equipment, and they, you know, it involves, you know, we've got art and design, we've got architecture, we've got engineering, there's just so much making going on. So it was about going out and establishing those relationships and making those connections, but also outside of the Curtin community as well, to other organisations and public libraries and that sort of thing. So the first year was really very much about just a lot of talking, and We really wanted to evolve the makerspace in a very responsive way. So we didn't want to sort of come in with our idea of what it should be, because it wasn't really for us. It was for the clients or the people who are going to be using it. So it was very much about a lot of discussions about what do you make, what do you want to make, what would you like to see in a makerspace, you know, that kind of things, and then being able to respond like that. So even in terms of, you know, equipment and getting the gear, it was kind of like, let's find out what people suggest and want. So it's very a lot of kind of, you know, going out and getting feedback and that from people. And the other thing that we did too was setting up, because we didn't have a space, we started off by setting up pop-up maker spaces. And so the first one that we did was for a Curtin-wide event called the Festival of Learning, and we sort of set up a heap of workshops and discussion groups and things like that over a week, and we just kind of like set ourselves up down on level two in the student lounge area. That was really great because it was an opportunity where we had these conversations with people. What we were able to say, you know, you're really passionate about Arduino, can you come and run a workshop? So it was not only just making these connections, but getting them into the library to run these workshops for us. And the other good thing about piggybacking on events that are already going is that, you know, you get put on their program and they do all the promotion and that sort of thing. So that's a really big part of the activities of the makerspace, and that really started then, but we've been, you know, doing something for the festival every year. That year we also did, they have a creative festival that started up that year. We joined in on that, so that's become a regular thing. So all of these events that happen around campus, we get in there. Sometimes they have conferences here, and we set up in the foyer, you know, as one of the stands, and just take every opportunity there is to sort of get out there and sort of, yeah, just set things up. And there's just a lot of interest from people. People just love to, you know, do a bit of knitting, a bit of yarn bombing, or make an origami something, or, you know, something more technical. It really seems to tap into people's sense of, it, I don't know, excitement and joy and creativity. You know, there's always a lot of interest whenever we talk about it or do things. So, yes, that first year, a lot of sort of pop-up stuff and talking and, yeah, just feeling our way. And then we were operating out of the lounge, and there's a group study room there which we used for temporarily that eventually became our little space. And it was really only big enough to store things and maybe to meet, was it maybe six people could fit in there? Not really big enough to do anything, but because of the student lounge, we were able to kind of like spill out into the lounge area, set up tables, and when we had things on, and then sort of, you know, shunk back into the into that room. But it was a secure place where we could store things. But really, we sort of ended up staying in that room for a couple of more years until this space became available, and which was about July this year for second semester. And they did a fairly basic refurbishment because they didn't want to spend too much money, because the library is going to be doing another refurbishment soon, a big library-wide one. And the plan is to build a purpose-built makerspace on level 3, which I believe will become the new entrance for the library. So you'll be walking into the library and there'll be a makerspace like quite prominent in the entrance. So it does reflect the kind of regard and the importance that the makerspace in the academic library is seen by the university in general. Our library, but the university in general really do hold this kind of activity, this kind of service and facility. Well, there's recognition of that it's a really important thing to be doing, as well as that being the library is particularly suited, I think, to a makerspace, because it's in the university environment, because it's not attached to any particular discipline. So there's this kind of neutrality about it. So it's really a perfect environment to encourage that sort of cross-disciplinary work, where you want to get your engineers working with the artists and things like that. And the facilities and the disciplines, they can be a little bit siloed and so on. So the library's a really fantastic environment for that, for bringing people from different disciplines together, and also acting as a conduit. So that's something that we're working on as well, as not sort of replicating what is available in other parts of the campus, but to work with them.
Sorry, Karen, how is that going? Because that's one of the things that in makerspaces is like, oh, you can get a medical student sitting next to an architect, and you know, someone who knows 3D printers or something, and then they can come up with something they would never come up with alone. How is that actually, is that working, or is that?
It really is, yeah. I think it's not just our own efforts in building cross-disciplinary things, but I mean, I suppose most of my experience has been in the area of humanities, or digital humanities is something that I kind of am quite interested in, and particularly that's where I've seen like projects and research projects that are starting to sort of be based here that involve some of us and some of them, but academics and researchers are using the space here. But it's in the area of digital humanities that I've seen some, you know, fantastic sort of collaborations. But also, like, for example, Marie, I think it was last year, she had a wonderful project that she ran to coincide with the mural painting that was the form project. They came onto campus and painted all these amazing murals. So she worked with place activation people to create this kind of interactive wall, and actually it used a makey-makey. But she somehow managed to get students, some art students and some engineering students, and to come together. And so the engineering guy worked on the makey-makey side and the artist did the mural, and that was a wonderful kind of interactive thing that we had out. So that's a really nice example of two students from different disciplines coming together. Yeah, and certainly I know that in the digital humanities research projects that there's a lot of cross-disciplinary work. But yeah, no, it's a challenge though, I think.
Hackathons are a good way to...
Hackathons, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
The university, so that new course is one, I think that's marketing or whatever, so that can even be something that the makerspace could look into down the line.
Yeah.
And we because that... Make-a-thon.
Yeah, we did, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we had a cultural, we called it a cultural makeathon.
Right.
Yeah.
Must have missed that.
Yeah, that was a wonderful, wonderful event. It was great, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So I think the way that the space has been used, or the way the makerspace is used is that, you know, there are these opportunities for events. So the cultural makeathon was part of some funding that one of our academics, Eric Champion, Professor of Cultural Heritage and Visualisation, I think, is the title. He got a grant, ran a kind of symposium with some speakers, and then we had a cultural makeathon, which was, the challenge was for groups to use cultural data to produce something. So we made it a makeathon to kind of open it up to not just, you know, some digital product in the end, but to include some making kinds of things as well. So we did have one team who, yeah, did some really nice things with digital image. Or they actually created some beautiful, like, sand images things, and then did some digital things from that. And that was really lovely. But we had about three or four really, really good projects that came out of that. Yeah, so events like that are fantastic, and we do something every year for National Science Week as well, and a couple of times we've got funding from the small grant from National Science Week and ran a week-long events. And yeah, that was, in fact, the first one was Andrew ran a workshop, The Bright Bunnies. And I really think that's a fantastic example. In fact, some of us have just written a chapter for a book on makerspaces in the digital world. And that's actually a book on digital humanities. And our chapter's on how makerspaces can support it. And I used the Bright Bunnies example because I think it's really good to illustrate a few different things. So with that workshop, it was run for the community. So it was mainly kids who came along to it. Andrew organised it, so it was creating these little felt bunnies that were kind of little stuffed toys, and so it involved sewing and learning those skills, but it also involved soldering up a circuit board. Mm. It was really quite complex, wasn't it? Because it had a switch, a magnetic switch, so that when you put the carrot up to the bunny's mouth, the tummy lit up and that sort of thing. Yeah, so it involved... We negotiated with the engineering department. We worked with them to use their soldering labs and things like that. In the chapter, I actually use that as a good example of how with the makerspace, just generally, but I think just with activities as well, that the whole sort of philosophy behind making is about experimentation and being open-ended without, you know, set sort of, you know, things of this is what you're going to make and this is what you need to end up with. It's much more philosophy of being experimental, and you've got a problem, let's solve it and see how it goes. But something like, you know, soldering or doing a circuit board, you can't really just throw that at people and say, hey, invent something, solder something and whatever. You need to provide structure and guidance around it. But at the same time, being able to leave things open for creativity. And I think that was a really, really nice example where you need to provide safety, you need to provide structure and guidance. But then when these kids got hold of these bunnies, it was just so gorgeous. They came up, they didn't want to necessarily make the bunny. And so they really hacked the whole bunny thing. So they made monsters, they made, you know, all sorts of things from it. And I think it's a really nice example to show how you can let kids or people just be free to be creative while at the same, but it's a balance, I think it's a balancing act. And I think just generally with the makerspace, we need to have structures in place to make sure that people are safe and that the equipment gets looked after. And when people come in to learn things, it's one thing to say, hey, go and, you know, do whatever you like. But on the other hand, you need to have these kind of like structured workshops or whatever when people can come in and guide and teach and share. So yeah, it's a really kind of interesting thing that one of the themes that we wrote about in this chapter was how the makerspace is quite a liminal space, in that it sits on the edge of the library as an institution and an organisation, and the campus out there. It really kind of sits in that halfway thing. We don't want to be an entrenched part of the library. That we kind of want to be a bit a bit independent. Yeah, we want the other curtain community members who are part of it to be as much a part of it as, say, the library staff are responsible for it and so on. And when you start looking into ideas around liminal space, and you are freed in a way from those structures that can really stifle creativity, it can provide a space for failure and for mistakes and for experimentation without being subject to the same sort of constrictions that you might. Yeah, I think that's a very exciting thing about the makerspace. So we kind of want to retain. We don't want to bog it down with rules and procedures and, you know, all of the stuff around it. But recognising that, you know, we do have to have it somewhat there.
Are you finding it supported by staff? Are they coming in and checking out things? And
library staff?
Or other staff as well?
Yeah, so the library staff has been an interesting sort of journey. I think so there are... Yes.
That's helpful.
So we've had it as an approved wellness. So
excellent.
So people can come and work in there. They're entitled to. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is.
Especially if they've got the stress relief thing over there.
Well,
for them.
They've been watching too much news. They can
come in here and do something different.
Yeah,
that's really good.
Yeah. We also staff it with volunteers from the library. So we have one.
Okay.
Person Marie, who is 0.8, so she is basically the only sort of that the role
dedicated
only dedicated person, 0.8. But it's been fantastic that this year they created a position, and going forward next year it is now a new position in the library, which is fantastic. So she has had to rely on volunteers from within the library. So each at the beginning of the year, she put out a call to say who's interested and ask for volunteers. And then we've had a sort of a roster system where they might give 2 hours of time a week. So that with the amount of volunteers we've had, I'm not sure how many there are in that pool, but there is a kind of enough that we can have it open from 10 till 2. Every day. If we had more volunteers, we could have it open longer. Some people have volunteered and come and found that it's not really their thing, or they want to be spoon-fed everything, whereas we want people to come and get involved and be motivated to learn the stuff themselves, so that then they're able to then help other people who come in and want to use the stuff. A lot of the projects that we've shown and that are around are things that library staff have been doing, and that's a really good way to learn the skills and stuff to then be able to help other people. So a really big part of it initially is getting the library staff involved and skilled and, you know, able to know how everything works. So that's an ongoing kind of task or challenge, I guess. A lot of staff, teaching staff, academic staff, research staff are very interested and love to come in and see and think, oh, how can I use this for my teaching? And that's another area that we really want to support and have supported. I think that will become more and more as teaching staff recognise or realise how engaging their classes can be through if they come up here and have making activities as part of their learning. And It really is something that can be applied to any subject, whether it's chemistry or whatever. But some of the examples of the kind of work that we've done to support the curriculum so far has been things like design students. They came in, they had part of their assignments was to design a badge. So for them to be able to come in and actually make the badges that they designed is a really great way to, just add that extra dimension. I had library studies students that I was teaching information literacy. We ran sessions in here where they used makey-makeys and little bits and all sorts of things to create prototypes of learning activities that they could take out into libraries. Some fantastic things that they came up with there. We had a workshop here with the transmedia students who came to make games for their transmedia project. So, you know, that kind of thing we do. We also support researchers around their projects as well. So we've had, you know, HDR students come in and run workshops that relate to the work that they're doing or use the facilities. So, yeah, a couple of guys in this afternoon were starting a project over there using the Kinect camera for something. So, yeah, there's lots of that sort of thing going on as well.
Sorry, we've got 10 minutes. Do we want to explore and learn?
Yeah, make something.
Make some badges and only
make a badge.
Here.
Yeah. Especially branded Ucati badges.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. Thank you so much, Karen.
No worries. You're welcome.
And the things you're making and doing was fantastic. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
That was Karen Miller, Curtin University Library Learning Coordinator, speaking about the evolution of the makerspace. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'd love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And remember, folks, JFDI.